It's 5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to MPB and Radio. Ahead on Maine Things Considered this evening, addressing the future of campaign financing in Maine. And is Riverview Psychiatric Center no longer admitting patients? We'll have those stories and your Maine newscast just ahead. But first, this national and world news from NPR. It's 5:32. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. On a vote of 7-4, a legislative panel has sent on to the Maine Senate a measure that would prohibit the shackling of pregnant women, except under extraordinary circumstances. Supporters of the measure say the shackling has been known to increase chances of falling and interferes with the administration of proper care. Opponents of the measure say not using shackles is already a Maine Department of Corrections policy. Ricky Long is a Republican representative from Sherman.
I want us directing the Department of Corrections to direct the county jails to implement the rules they have in place at this time. They seem to be working.
When restraints are used on pregnant women, the bill stipulates that corrections officials must document the extraordinary circumstances that required their use. A Skowhegan municipal panel has said no to a request from the owners of the Sappy paper mill to lower the site's property tax valuation. The company wanted to cut the tax value by more than $137 million, which would have cost the town $2.3 million in revenue. The mill is the town's biggest taxpayer. On a 3-0 vote, the Board of Assessors denied Sappy's request, saying it was not convinced the company's appraised value of the mill is correct. The mill is assessed by the town at nearly $464 million. The company says the value is $326 million. Company officials say they plan to appeal. And Maine independent U.S. Senator Angus King has paid a visit to the northern Canadian territory of Nunavut, along with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. They were there to attend this year's Arctic Council ministerial meeting. The U.S. has assumed chairmanship of the Arctic Council for the next 2 years. King, who is a founding member of the Senate Arctic Caucus, says this is an opportunity for the U.S. to strengthen relationships that could, quote, define the future of the region for decades to come. Since visiting the Arctic last year, King has called for greater U.S. leadership in the region and says the U.S. must recalibrate its national security and economic strategies to better address the changing Arctic environment. In weather tonight, mostly cloudy, some isolated rain showers statewide, with low temperatures tonight in the low 30s to low 40s north to south. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with some isolated showers and highs in the mid-40s to mid-50s. And on Sunday, cloudy, but we will see some sun south of Augusta. Isolated showers over the north and east with highs in the mid-40s to mid-50s. I'm Nora Flaherty. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Health and Human Services has stopped admitting patients to the Riverview Psychiatric Center. That's according to the court master in the ongoing consent decree covering mental health services at the center. And if it's true, it's a violation of the decree. As Mal Leary reports, the court master, former Chief Justice of the Maine Supreme Court, Dan Wathen, wants the department to start admitting patients again as soon as possible.
In a filing with the Superior Court in Kennebec County, Wathen says Riverview stopped accepting new patients at the forensic units in March. He says up to that point, the center had been doing a good job keeping up with demand. But as of last week, there were 30 vacant beds out of the 92-bed capacity. Wathen says there are more than 30 patients waiting in jails, hospital emergency departments, and community psychiatric hospitals for placement at Riverview.
11 or 12 days in an emergency department in a room with no window is not the place where people with serious and persistent mental illness should be held.
Wathen says he supported the request by DHHS for additional staff at Riverview that was approved in an emergency spending bill passed by lawmakers last month. But he says the department is reporting that it has not been able to fill vacancies in the existing staff at the center, let alone fill the new ones just created.
At this point, it looks as though there isn't any prospect that there's going to be any job after July 1, so that they haven't filled those positions because it's not a very tenable situation.
But the leaders of the legislature's Appropriations Committee say they would not have added the positions in the emergency budget if they did not intend to carry the positions through the 2-year state budget. They say they simply have not progressed far enough in budget negotiations to take a formal vote on that part of the DHHS budget. Attempts to reach DHHS Commissioner Mary Mayhew on Wathen's court filing were unsuccessful. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
You're listening to Maine Public Radio. This is Maine Things Considered. Still to come, a water pipe break at a beloved Southern Maine community radio station puts thousands of vinyl records at risk. But first, a freshman Republican lawmaker is encountering some significant opposition, some within his own party, over his proposal to send Maine's taxpayer-funded campaign law back to the voters for reconsideration. Senator Eric Brakey of Auburn wants to repeal the law and redirect the millions of tax dollars spent on legislative campaigns toward local education costs. But some critics say Brakey actually has an ulterior motive. A.J. Higgins has more.
With a title like an act to repeal the Maine Clean Election Act and direct the savings to be used for the state's contribution toward the costs of education funding, you could say that Brakey's bill appears pretty straightforward at first glance. But during his 45 minutes in front of the legislature's Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee, Brakey made it clear that the real target of his legislation is a citizens' initiative on the November ballot that would strengthen Maine's 19-year-old Clean Election Act.
The intent of this bill is to have a competing ballot measure.
And the measure that Brakey wants his bill to compete against is supported by Maine Citizens for Clean Elections. It would beef up the state's existing publicly financed campaign law by giving those candidates additional money to offset spending by their privately funded opponents. Brakey spent a considerable portion of his appearance before the committee talking about whether, given a second chance, that the millions of taxpayer dollars spent on legislative campaigns might actually be put to better use elsewhere, like local school budgets, for example. And Brakey says the fact that Maine voters overwhelmingly approve clean elections at the ballot box doesn't make that law sacrosanct.
In the recent past, Maine voters also decided that state government should be paying 55% of the bill for public education here in Maine. It's my personal belief that, as long as that 55% mandate is left unfulfilled, not a single penny of taxpayer money should be spent on political yard signs and attack mailers. I think that's just a simple matter of spending priorities. I think our education of our kids is more important than campaign yard signs.
Seconds after his presentation, members of the Veterans and Legal Affairs Committee essentially declared open season on Brakey's bill, including one of his fellow Republicans, Senator Scott Searway of Benton, who told the freshman GOP lawmaker that his bill would actually put more money into state politics by triggering the creation of special interest groups to capture the additional education money. And that point led to a terse exchange.
Well, I think you're contradicting yourself on this sentence, on this bill.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's what I see.
I don't completely follow the logic.
Former Republican State Senator Ed Youngblood of Brewer told committee members that he also opposes the bill. Representing Maine Citizens for Clean Elections, Youngblood urged the panel to consider the positive role the law has played in Maine campaign spending.
The Maine Clean Election System does provide accountability. The Clean Election System keeps the voters in the driver's seat, which is where it belongs, to help make sure that our state government is responsible to the voters and not to wealthy contributors.
Democrats were also critical of the bill. Senator John Patrick, a Rumford Democrat, says his constituents gladly pay the $5 qualifying contributions to clean election candidates in order to offset the $375 in a primary and $375 in a general election that privately funded candidates can collect. Patrick pursued his point with Brakey.
A lot of those people actually believe that if someone gives you $700 in an election cycle, whether you're a citizen, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a business, that in fact that is special interest. Mm. Would you agree?
I just think, geez, if someone can buy your vote for $375, you must be a cheap date, you know?
Bob Howe, a lobbyist with MCCE, said Brakey's real target was the clean election ballot question.
What it really is an attempt to undermine the initiative. In order to succeed, it doesn't have to get a majority. All it has to do is deprive the initiative of a majority, and the initiative fails, even if repeal doesn't occur. That's what this is about, and I think we need to call a proverbial spade a spade.
Lawmakers are expected to start their review of the bill within the next 2 weeks. For MPBN News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Finally, today, volunteers at a Southern Maine community radio station are hard at work trying to save thousands of vinyl records. About 3,000 LPs, many of them rare blues and reggae releases, were damaged when a water pipe burst at WMPG on the University of Southern Maine's Portland campus. Tom Porter has more.
A portable fan has been running more or less constantly in the basement of WMPG Radio since Thursday morning. That's when someone in the building noticed a complete lack of water pressure when they turned the taps on. Not a good sign, says station manager Jim Rand.
When you don't have water pressure, it's usually something bad is happening. And the plumber came over and quickly identified that there was water shooting into the basement here at unbelievable pressure, turned the water off, and fixed where the pipe had burst.
By which time, there were several inches of water on the floor of the basement, where WMPG keeps its library of some 20,000 records. Rand says more than 3,000 of them were damaged.
And the water came flying from above the head and came down right on top of our blues library first, which was the worst case because we broadcast blues music 5 to 7 p.m. six nights a week here. And it's one of our most popular shows. And we've been collecting these records since 1973.
Also damaged a number of rock LPs, letters L and M, so listeners may not be hearing any Led Zeppelin or Motorhead for a while. Other musical casualties include some world music and spoken word, as well as a lot of rare reggae. Jamaican imports, says Rand.
Lots of collector's items, irreplaceable music, and they all were covered in water, pretty much.
The good news is that Rand expects many of the vinyl discs to survive. He dusts off one rare Delta Blues recording that made it through the flood. Is this you going to play?
This is Going Back to Memphis by Sonnyland Slim.
Several of WMPG's 200 volunteers spent all day Thursday transporting the waterlogged vinyl to a nearby university-owned building where thousands of albums were laid out over two floors, sheets of newspaper between them to help them dry and prevent damage. Rand says he was encouraged by the response.
It was great to see people coming over. I think people really, people have an affinity for vinyl and people in the community think it's important.
While he hopes most of the vinyl can be saved, Rand says the prognosis is not so good for the damaged album covers and liner notes.
Maybe some of them will be savable, but you have chances of getting black mold and stuff like that, and you don't want that.
Which means some of WMPG's dedicated volunteers will no doubt be spending the foreseeable future documenting the records one by one and producing new, albeit makeshift, album covers.
We're going to have to buy all new cardboard jackets for the records, and then we'll photograph all of the covers and try to document that part of it and match them back up.
They may not look as good as they did before, says Jim Rand, but the important thing is the music will play on.
Someone should maybe write a blues song about what's happened here this week.
Yeah.
For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
And at 13 minutes before 6 o'clock, let's check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Janis.
As we go into the overnight hours, an upper-level low will still spin just overhead, giving us mostly cloudy skies and isolated rain showers across the state. We'll have lows at 30 to 40 degrees from north to south. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies statewide with isolated showers once again. Not everyone will see the showers. Highs at 45 to 55. Sunday, a cloudy day overall with breaks of sun south of Augusta, isolated showers over northern and eastern Maine. Highs at 45 to 55. Monday, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, highs in the mid-40s to mid-50s. Tuesday, we'll have a mix of sun and clouds statewide, highs in the upper 40s to upper 50s. For the Maine Public Broadcasting Network, I'm meteorologist Paul Janis.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, Barbara Caridi, and Susan Sharon. I'm Nora Flaherty.